The aphorism I would like to think of is, the above and below need ground level. I've never been able to understand why many people refuse to believe in universal salvation. Not only do we have racial and social segregation, but we find heaven in a belief system which condemns dissidents to eternal torture in hell. Very good people fall for this. There was a lady warden of my high church Anglican school who told us that unbaptized children could not go to heaven. This is particularly unfortunate, as we Protestants did not believe in purgatory. It was heaven or hell. You could do nothing to improve matters once you were dead. It was unbelievably cruel. But I did realize that people were not cruel. They reminded me of the home life of the meerkats of the Kalahari Desert, so lovingly and scientifically monitored and filmed by the Cambridge team. A mother meerkat naturally killed all her sister's cubs for some biological benefit for herself. This is nature. I remember a very kind young American woman, mother of two, really upset by my strange ideas. She was young. "Olivia," she said, "it's all very well you saying everybody will be saved. But think of St. Francis. He was a lovely man, giving away all that money to the poor. You say Hitler could get to heaven somehow. Well, even if they let him into heaven after thousands of years, don't you think St. Francis would be a little hurt? After all, where would be his reward?" Life is restricted by segregation, usually petty and snobbish. My father was deemed unworthy to marry my mother because he was only an architect. As my mother's relations would say sneeringly, "When you have anything wrong with the drains, well, send for dear Manning." Oh, dear. The social rules that limit us are illustrated by the behavior of my great-grandmother early in the 19th century. As wife of a very famous physician, a very noble one, Dr. Charles Robert Graves, she was not received at the Vice-Regal Court in Dublin Castle, in which she felt entitled. Doctors weren't admitted. Surgeons, of course not, but doctors as well. Her grandfather, Cornelius Grogan, who was one of these Protestant but real Irish Celts, had given the family Johnstown Castle to be the first Irish Senate of a new republic during the 98 Rising. The Senate lasted one day. He was duly hanged by the British, and the family lost the castle. So his descendant, my great-grandmother, scraped up the money to buy the haunted Rathfarnham Castle, which gave her the social status to get into the Vice-Regal Court. She wanted to get there. The curious Irish comeback, which she felt was her right. She was the only doctor's wife to get into Dublin Castle at that time. My own attitude, the one born in 1917, was very much the same as my generation, though of course I thought I was original. We accused our elders of being Victorian. We admired Mahatma Gandhi. During the war, and many of us are pacifists, including me, we hero-worshipped the women in the French resistance. Our socialist, humane, practical world was scripted by Bernard Shaw, H.G. Wells, and George Orwell. It had one disadvantage they don't seem to have noticed or minded. We had to die. We had no God, no angels, no heaven, no immortal souls. The paranormal was taboo. You were bereft of divinity. The first wave of a new spiritual renaissance, though, occurred just after the war. It was like moving into antimatter after matter. Again, I thought I was alone. When I awakened into multidimensional consciousness, I was alone. Except, of course, for strange beings with bodies of light and heavenly minds. But people around me made me feel totally deluded. I was having hallucinations. Then I was joined by my brother, then an Orthodox rector of the Church of England. The same thing happened to him in a different way, but it happened. Then his wife, a Quaker stock. I remember the three of us meditating at the Castle Library in 1963, feeling very alone. I said, we will never be alone again. And that was true. We met followers of spiritualism, occult orders, historic groupings, claiming teachings, and having teachings from ancient Egypt, Hinduism, the Tao. We started a Huntington Castle Center for Meditation Study. Then in the 60s came a great wave of millions of young people, the flower people. These did not all take drugs, though this was given as a medical reason for their spiritual experiences. They had them. Then there followed a feeling of outer space, that we were being visited not only from inner space, but outer. There followed an outburst of religious extremism, leading to some groups who committed group suicide to get to the other world. These were later joined by enthusiasts who not only were willing to kill themselves, but felt it would be a benefit for their faith if they brought the opposition with them to the next world, themselves to heaven, their enemies to hell. Our own idealistic New Agers began also to develop paranoid obsessions. Many kept their equilibrium, but others became a prey to monstrous conspiracy theories that reminded me of the persecution of Jews in the last century. Why do we need enemies? The answer is obvious. We have them. But as every person alive has a different enemy, there does not seem much of a future for the human race. So the idea would be for us not to have any enemies. Through spiritual alchemy, we may learn to transmute our enemies, heretics, evildoers, warmongers, into their own true selves. But we can only do this miracle if we know what their true selves are. And we don't know, and they don't know. There are two sources of divine information as to this mystery. The divine beings who have love, beauty, and truth, they help us through inspiration. But this only works if we accept this influx. Our free will is essential. Otherwise, we are robots, not converts. Divine inspiration may be represented by a great V, an inverted triangle, as below, above, so below. Another way is that of hard moral work on the material plane. This is our evolutionary path. As below, so above, and it must be in balance and equally important. The emblem is an up-pointed triangle. When these two triangles join at their tips, they produce a diamond to the degree of 1.618, the golden mean. Here we have the diamond of perfection, divine union of idealism and the mundane, the above and the below, love and truth, mind and heart. So I sketched in the diamond of harmony to make it actual. This is the land I thought of our life's destination and our home. We are living now where we need to be. We are at the journey's end, at the beginning and the end, if we accept it. Names came to me: Heaven, Valhalla, Paradise, Tiananmen, Korean Margoland, Shangri-La, the Brocky-Land, the land of Caesarea, for each of us our own land of heart's desire, waiting for us if we'll only choose. Poussin entitled his famous painting of Rennes le Château as, I also lived in Arcadia. Why not? Optimists have given romantic place names to their homes. Artists live in Bohemia all over the world. Alas, now these names are called a string of numbers put on a mailbox. I was in Arizona when the idea came to me that we should live in our own idyllic land. I found I was sitting at the time in Utopia. My hostess Stephanie assured me that that really was the name. Our friend John Michael, the opera singer, said his place had been called Avalon and in Paradise Valley.